Welcome to Follow the Sound Album Review. You know, we like to do different things here on the show. We like to do, you know, some album reviews, some music history. Sometimes we just talk about the artists and stuff. But this day, right now, we're doing an album review, and I've got something that was exceptionally hard-hitting for me and influential in my life growing up, and that is Weezer, the Blue Album. And to help me review this, I have my brother with me, Jamie Kroc.
Hey, how's it going? So this is absolutely one of the most seminal albums for me. Came out in 1994. I was a 14-year-old, and there were just so many of the themes and the elements of this album that resonated with me as a bit of a nerd, maybe a bit of an outsider. There was just so much that I connected with on this album. Hands down, one of my favorites, and really excited to just sort of dig into this and explore some of it, dissect some lyrics, do things like that.
So I just want to do a little bit of backstory on the Blue Album itself. Of course, in the band were Rivers Cuomo, a drummer Patrick Wilson, bassist Matt Sharp, and guitarist Jason Cooper. They formed in 92.
Cropper.
Sorry, that is right. There is an R there. Jason Cropper. They formed in 92 and ended up actually their first gig was playing for Keanu Reeves' band Dogstar.
Yeah, I hate myself that I know that Keanu Reeves was in a band named Dogstar. I don't know what valuable brain space that takes up that I could have used to maybe like learn how to be a doctor or something, but instead I know that Keanu Reeves was in a band named Dogstar.
So there you go. They ended up a little bit after that signing to Geffen Records and then went to Electric Lady Studios in New York to start recording the Blue Album. And of course it was released in 1994 and had a massive amount of success.
It was a triple platinum with yes. Three big singles. But, yes. You know, we briefly already touched on Jason Cropper. It's kind of like the Pete Best of Weezer, if you could describe it that way. Because, so Jason Cropper is part of the just a founding member of the band. And right as they're going to record this album, he's recording tracks on it. He even gets a writing credit on the opening track.
My name is Jonas, yes.
One of the rare writing credits outside of Rivers Cuomo.
Yeah.
And then right before they finalize the album, he signs a non-disclosure agreement and backs out, leaves the band, seemingly under like okay circumstances because he continues to be friends with the other band members.
Yeah.
I believe he even goes to River Cuomo's wedding at some point. But he backs out, and then Rivers covers all of his guitar parts, overdubs all of his vocals, and sort of erases him from this first record. Brian Bell, the guy that they bring in to replace him, kind of does some of that as well. But
wow,
it's a peculiar bit of trivia. And it wasn't until the release of the deluxe edition of this album, the Blue Album Deluxe Edition,
yeah,
that you get to hear a little bit of Cropper's original work because it's got some rough cut tracks and some of their demos and things like that. It's hard. I mean, it's not like it's transformational,
yeah,
but it is interesting because Cropper was a backup vocalist more than Bell, who replaced him, is. So it would be interesting in a way, I think, to hear some of Weezer's songs with a broader range of vocals, because mainly you're just hearing Rivers and then Matt.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's always struck me as a quirky component of this, and I mean, I'd love to just sort of sit him down and like privately talk to him and like, what was that all about? Because we see people leave bands all the time, and it's for acrimonious things, or it's over money, or because you're in Destiny's Child, and but it's not typically like, hey, I just wanted to be out. And the non-disclosure agreement makes it seem weird too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's not something that's normally done for, you know, normal circumstances. But we've been talking about it enough. Let's actually get into it. This is Weezer's Blue Album, their first album. And frankly, it is my favorite album of theirs. But the first song on the list is My Name is Jonas.
Oh,
thanks for all you've shown us. This is how we feel. Come sit next to me, pour yourself some tea. Just like grandma made when couldn't find sleep. Things were better then, once but never again. We've all left the den and tight by it. Choo-choo train left right on time. A ticket costs only your mind. Driver said, hey man, we go all the way.
Now that is a great kickoff to an album.
I think it features one of the just like a nice soft start, and then it just kind of kicks you right in the face because it just jumps into this real heavy guitar.
That overdrive and distortion on the guitar, and just the drums hammering away and all of that.
You know, it also features something that I think doesn't show up as much in later Weezer albums, which is that acoustic guitar.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's just a style thing from the era that they were in, but it's always been one of the components that I've enjoyed to have this sort of light, jangly acoustic guitar mixed in with the more power chord riffing, you know, heavy metal.
Yeah,
I mean, Weezer isn't heavy metal, but there's an influence that comes through with the lead playing.
So for me, with Weezer, they share a lot of. Like musically, some of the traits that I really enjoy with bands like Oasis, which is just that raw power of a sound that they put into their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really good dynamics with it that bounce around from high to low and stuff. And so that's one of the reasons why this album is such a big one for me. But let's move on to their next song on the album, which is called No One Else. I love that riff to kick it off.
Yeah, this is I'm really conflicted about this song because musically speaking, it's one that I really enjoy. But the lyrics, it's always struck me. I was like, oh, this is kind of a jerk move. You know, like I want a girl who laughs for no one else. When I'm away, she puts her makeup on the shelf. And it's like, that's kind of controlling.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I really struggled with that. But you can see Rivers kind of talks about this at some point. He wrote it knowing that this is a mean thing, that this is like he's being kind of a controlling weirdo. And it ties into the next song from the album because you kind of get to see this is what's happening in the relationship. And then the next song is sort of what happens when your relationship looks like that.
And that next song is called The World Has Turned and Left Me Here.
You
It's actually a deep song.
Yeah, you know, so this song follows a breakup. When Rivers talks about this, he's sort of explaining that the relationship breaks up after how much of a jerk he's been sort of in the first one. And then he realizes all of those mistakes, and he's kind of left hollow by this relationship ending. And this song has always been one of my favorites, even though the you know, lost love has not been a reoccurring theme in my life. It's still something, maybe because of that foreignness, is why I am drawn to it. You know, it's an experience outside of my own, and so I've always enjoyed it.
So one of the reasons why I like it musically is because, one, it's pop chords, but it's done with that really, really heavy distortion and overdrive. But also the use of harmony parts at like the ends of phrases, mm-hmm. that is something that you and I both know. There are certain bands that we both like the Impossibles or like Animal Chin or the Stereo. It's like they do those types of things where they put that harmony at the end of a phrase, and that is exactly the kind of song that like the Impossibles would do.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Weezer has to be one of the most influential bands on the Impossibles. A great band, one of my favorites. That I've gone to see several times, having to drive to Austin, Texas to do it. So if you love Weezer, look into The Impossibles. That'd be my recommendation.
Absolutely.
There's some ska mixed in there, so if you're a fan of ska, look that up. And if you ever thought you could smush Weezer and ska together, you could do that with The Impossibles.
Yeah. Also, if you squish Weezer and Queen together, you get another St. Louis band known as Ludo. But we'll get into them on a different show. So this next song coming up is like their like super hit, right? Like,
yeah,
everybody knows the first line to this song at least.
Yeah,
like even if they don't know who Weezer is, they know this song, which is kind of amazing. And I want to side note here for just one quick second, just to show that, like, it made me feel super old when this happened, but I was at a music festival and Weezer was playing there. And as I'm standing there waiting for Weezer to come up, the group of kids, a couple of girls, a couple of guys, come running up, and the girl goes, "Who is Weezer?" And I almost lost it and just like went off and just wanted to scream at people for not knowing who they are. But I tell you what, those same kids were dancing to like every single song they played.
Well,
so,
I mean, they probably recognized it when, you know, stuff
they started playing,
like Island in the Sun or something like that.
Yes, yes. But this song is called Buddy Holly, and it is, quite frankly, an amazing song.
What's with this home?
Heavy use of the keyboards in the background.
Yeah,
it's always good.
I think that's you see a little bit of Rick Ocasek, you know, lead singer, one of the key songwriters for the band The Cars.
Yes.
He's the producer for this album.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a good analog between The Cars and Weezer. You know, they're sort of similar bands, you know, from different eras. And I think in a way you can see this album as Rick Ocasek sort of passing the torch for like kind of nerdy power pop rock.
Yes.
You know, passing it on to Weezer. And so there isn't half as much synthesizer in this as there would be in a Cars album.
That's true.
But you see little flourishes of it here and there. Buddy Holly probably featuring it the best.
Yes, yes. So I got to say, just because it's the two of us and we're not like super in-depth discussing everything, we are kind of flying through this album right now, actually.
Oh, well, I mean, I could slow it down for sure.
No, it's not necessary. I know you probably want to get home. It's late. But let's get on to the next one, which is called Undone or The Sweater Song. And once again, this is one of those songs that stuck with me for a good long while.
I guess, technically speaking, this is the first single. Buddy Holly is probably the bigger hit. I mean, it had Weezer had a great relationship with Spike Jones,
mm-hmm.
Just a fabulous music video director from that time, who's gone on to do some really good feature films as well.
You are correct. The Sweater Song was the first single that they released.
Yeah.
And
Buddy Holly, though, went on to have, get nominated for like MTV Awards and famously featured the Happy Days set. So for anyone that hasn't seen it, the band Weezer is there playing in, is it Al's Diner?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
From Happy Days. And they've got, they mix in the Fonz and he's dancing away to Weezer. The other bizarre thing about this song, though, is that it was included with the Windows 95 installation disc.
What?
So, yeah.
I didn't know that.
This is a bit of trivia I looked up. It also included the Rob Roy trailer and then one other song whose name is escaping me. But if you if you went to upgrade your computer from Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, you got included a copy of Weezer's Buddy Holly.
Wow.
So that struck me as a really bizarre bit of marketing. It's something that Windows does from time to time. I mean, we also know that they hired the actors from Friends when they were rolling out,
I think it was Windows
98.
Yep.
That's a very terrifying video to watch. But
Chandler talking about it.
I mean, if you want to watch Friends characters talk about Windows rollouts, that's the place to do it. But
man.
But Undone is not as visually arresting a music video. It just features them playing and then like a bunch of dogs coming into the set. Buddy Holly, though, one of the first instances, I think, of really seamlessly splitting old footage, new footage together, looks great.
Yeah, but let's get on to the next track, which is Undone, the Sweater Song. Cut it out at the chord change there. Like, let's modulate. Why not?
You know, as a musician, one of the things that I've always been fascinated about by that song is the restraint in keeping that opening tempo.
Yes,
because it's so plodding, and it's almost like rolling a marble off of a table. Like you're just sort of like watching something slowly drop off with each one of those notes. This song in particular is one that's maybe had a couple of different interpretations. Mm-hmm. Some people have argued that, you know, it's sort of a breakup song, but the band itself says it's more about sort of feeling yourself coming apart, like you're the proverbial sweater in this situation. But that's a great song to listen to with headphones. There's a lot of like stuff going on in the background.
Yes.
And it's harder to hear if you're just listening to through speakers or something, or if you're playing
it
through
your car. Or just on the radio or something. Yeah.
Is that there's, you know, the conversations that are taking place in between the verses that in right channel, you're getting to hear a person like very clearly communicate. In the left channel, you're hearing like these monosyllabic responses. I'm like, yeah, okay. Or, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And so you just, I think you get a better feel for the song if you're going to listen to it with the headphones on.
Yeah, I completely agree. The thing that I like about it, especially with the intro, is sort of how brooding it sounds, you know, with the guitar doing that real simple pick that's in kind of like a minor key, you know, or at least an odd sounding note like pattern. And then, you know, even when it kicks into the full on chorus, you know, I know they do like a little small chorus before mm-hmm. and then into a bigger one. But when they kick into that, you know, it's you hear the lyrics. And if you listen to the music, though, and just how they layered everything, it's just a very well put together song.
And that's another cool one that you can hear like the original demo tracks of if you get the deluxe album.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear it and you can see how Ocasek really tightened it up as opposed to the rough demo that they had. And I think it makes it a much better song.
I actually, I need to get the deluxe edition because I haven't heard some of these songs that they have on here.
Oh yeah. The deluxe edition is phenomenal. You'll get to hear there's definitely some Weezer history involved in that.
So I actually know the history about what's number one on the deluxe album, which is, Michael and Carly.
Yeah.
Which was the names of like their fan club presidents.
Yeah. Yeah. Two sisters.
Yeah. And they a couple of years after that actually ended up dying in a car accident.
Yeah.
And Weezer ended up going to the funeral and stuff to.
Oh yeah. These girls, and I believe another sister.
So I guess it's Mikkel.
Passed away as well. So it was three daughters from one family.
Yeah.
In a tragic accident. And I believe that this happened after the Pinkerton album had been released.
Yeah. It was after they'd written the song and everything, because they wrote it for them before they died.
Yeah.
So.
You know, these girls, just absolutely loved music, and, you'll see them tied to several other bands. Jimmy Eat World off of the album called Bleed American, which they changed the title after 9/11.
Yeah.
But that's the one that has The Middle. It has a song called May Angels Lead You In. And it's about these two girls because they were also big supporters of Jimmy Eat World. So they happen to be two women that had great taste in music that tragically died. And but you get to hear them sort of be immortalized with that deluxe album and just hear a cute little song about them.
All right. So weird transition then to the next song on the list, which is track number 6. It's called Surf Wax America.
Sea is foaming like a bottle of beer. The wave is coming, but I ain't got no fear. I'm waxing down to that Agoria Pass. I'm waxing down because it's really a blast. I'm going to surf because I don't like your face. I'm bailing out because I hate Marines. I ride to running on and on in the lanes. I'm going surfing. We'll be right back.
Musically speaking, that is a killer song.
Oh, I love how amped up it is. It's it runs in the vein of classic American surf songs.
Yes.
And it definitely, I think this is the first point that it starts to touch on one of the primary Weezer influences, the Beach Boys.
Yes.
Rivers Cuomo talks about going out and buying Pet Sounds,
mm-hmm.
As a 22-year-old, I think. And this just became a formative album for him to listen to and had a huge impact on the direction that Weezer took. Now, he's a California guy. Weezer doesn't make a history out of doing a bunch of surf songs.
Yeah.
But they definitely touch on it with this one.
Well, side note, the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds was the first album I reviewed on this show. Very first episode.
Oh, yeah.
And it was an absolute pleasure going through that album again and again and again and again, and then getting a chance to actually talk about it. So Pet Sounds to me is one of the all-time greatest albums ever made, and I think will continue to do so, or will continue to be so forever,
yeah.
In my opinion. So,
and I, you know, not to keep plugging the deluxe edition, but there's a live version of Surf Wax that you can listen to, and you get the feel for how good they were, this original lineup with Matt Sharp, how good they were live, because there's almost no difference between the album version and the live version that you can hear there. It was originally a B-side for one of the singles, other than at some point, you know, when this song gets very low, and we didn't get to that as we were listening
to
it, but as the song gets very low, you can hear someone out in the audience yelling, "Smoke dope." and that's almost one of the only features that kind of gives it away that it's a live recording. So,
wow. I definitely want to check that one out. Up next, we've got another amazing song that is, of course,
the third single off the album.
The third single off the album, and it is just one of the best songs. Like, I seem to remember when listening to Weezer tracks, like, this was the song that really grabbed my attention. The rest of them, like, I thought were really good when I first heard them. But when I heard this one, I was like, oh my goodness, like, this is a great song.
Yeah.
Like, and then made me listen to the rest of the album. So, but I remember listening to this on the radio. But this song is called Say It Ain't So.
I mean, it's
my
nice,
favorite song
soft
on the album.
Start, and then it's a powerful, powerful kick into the chorus. I'm a ska fan. There's definitely that
ska element in the background.
Upstrokes with a little bit of palm muting because the notes drop so suddenly, and then that's in such sharp contrast to the heavy guitar that pops in there. And this is actually a second version of the song.
Oh yeah,
there were some albums that got out with a slightly different version of "Say It Ain't So." Mm. So there are other. Once again, this is something that's on the deluxe album. You can hear the original. There isn't a huge difference. You can kind of hear it in the clip that we just played.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it goes dun dun. So later on in the song, you hear dun dun doo. You hear that sort of secondary guitar part. That was what they added after the fact. You know, it's a tiny little thing, but it definitely gives a little bit more punch to the song. I mean, it's already a phenomenal song, but this is a brief glimpse, I think, into Rivers Cuomo's home life.
Because
this is him really starting to unpack some of the stuff about his parents' marriage, you know, and his family life, things like that. So one of the key lines, I think, here is... he talks about, he's talking to his dad. He says, "You cleaned up, found Jesus," which is an actual thing that happened. If you look it up, Rivers Cuomo's dad is now a born again pastor, sort of in the vibe of the, you know, Holy Ghost taking over, just. Amped
the,
up
like the,
worship,
the Pentecostal.
Yeah, it's like
evangelicals.
I believe he's a, and it's something that Rivers is connected to now, in a way that he's talks about watching his dad's performance, quote unquote. You know, his dad's sermons and his singing stuff, things like that. But this is where you're starting to see that these formative years of his life, and how they make such an impact on the songs that he's going to produce and then the kind of person that he is.
Yeah. Moving on to track number 8 called In the Garage.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Like the nerd anthem.
Yeah. I think I could spend the rest of this episode just talking about this one song.
Probably.
First off, obviously, the harmonica, which is, it shows up in several of the Weezer songs from this era. It doesn't show up as much, I don't think, in any of the other Weezer albums. In some cases, it's completely non-existent.
Yeah.
But at the time, it probably shows up on about half the tracks from this album. And you see it on some of the other demos, too, the things that didn't make the final cut. But yeah, to throw it out there to all the nerds that are listening that aren't our age, maybe the kids that are 20 and under or 25 and under, this song came out in 1994, and it came out in, you know, shortly after a time where people were absolutely freaking out about Dungeons and Dragons.
Yep.
The idea that Dungeons and Dragons was going to lead you into murdering people or murdering yourself. There was a couple of high profile cases. So hearing somebody say, like, "I play Dungeons and Dragons," was kind of a big deal. The other big thing there, I mean, obviously it follows right up with it, is I've got Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler 2. Two characters that maybe people, I mean,
they're not main characters of X-Men.
Nightcrawler has definitely become a little more famous. He's shown up in several of the films.
Yeah.
Kitty Pryde.
Showed up in a couple of the movies, too.
But like, still, Nightcrawler is
But she was more of a joke character than anything, because it was like, I know a girl who can run, who can walk through walls. Like,
well, and I mean, she was played by the actress from Juno.
Yes.
And Ellen Page. And so that raised her maybe Q profile a little bit.
Yeah.
But in 1994, if you said Nightcrawler to just a random person on the street, they'd have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, you don't get much better response now. But the idea that someone would make a song and reference two very peripheral, lesser-known X-Men character was kind of mind-blowing. And it was like a secret password that it's like, if he had said Superman,
it was nerd cred. That's what it was. He's like establishing his nerd cred.
Yeah.
But I love the lyrics in the song, even the second verse, you know, saying, I've got posters on the wall, my favorite rock group, Kiss. You know, just referencing that too.
And then then Ace Frehley and Peter Criss.
Yeah.
Maybe the two lesser known members of Kiss. So
exactly. But then, you know, like he in the chorus, in the garage, I feel safe. No one cares about my ways. It's like, you know, no one hears me sing this song. But even in like the following verses, you know, he says, I've got an electric guitar. I play my stupid songs. I write these stupid words and I love everyone. Like, you know, that's, it's little things like that. And I know you and I,
we started playing in a garage.
Well, kind of, it was a basement really. But you know, we grew up being musicians in this era. And, you know, trying to just figure out what we wanted to say, how we wanted to do it. And I know later on, even when I started writing my own music and stuff, like it was a struggle for me just to find like the way that I actually wanted to do things.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I wrote for years before I finally landed on the thing that I was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly the way that I want to do it, or the exactly way that I want to write songs. But it's, you know, I can imagine him that he's written hundreds of songs that nobody will ever hear.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wrote a ton of them before they even did anything.
Yeah. And I highly recommend picking up the Alone series. It's just like Rivers doing demo work. You get to see the sort of abortive attempts at writing a rock opera set in space. You get to hear some early Weezer demos. But the other thing about this song, you know, he references the band Kiss. We talked about that. And Kiss and that sort of heavy metal sound was influential for him. And I'm always fascinated to see a band or hear a band talk about how they're influenced by something, even if you don't necessarily see it in their sound. Like, you would never listen to a Weezer song and go, oh, these guys must have listened to a lot of Dio or something like that. You see it a little bit with the solo work. But you know, they really he took something and made it his own and sort of put it through a different lens. But then the other reference that is pretty easy to see in terms of his influence is going back to the Beach Boys, because it's a very short jump to see the In My Room.
Yes, which is
to In My Garage.
Like, is honestly my favorite Beach Boys song is In My Room. So.
Yeah. Even the phrasing, the melody of how it goes, very similar between these two songs. And as you talked about, you know, this is him sort of exposing all of these little elements in his life. Each verse steps forward and tells you a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I mean, well, look at the lyrics of In My Room. There's a world where I can go and tell my secrets to in my room. In this world, I lock out all my worries and my fears. And then goes, do my dreaming and my scheming, lie awake and pray. Do my crying and my sighing, laugh at yesterday. I mean, like, easily referencing. It's just that it's a newer nerd version of In My Room.
Yeah, you know, Rivers had his own father issues. You know, they're different than the ones that we see played out with the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I mean, the Beach Boys had a lot of father issues too.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I think the Beach Boys have bigger issues.
I think they had a lot bigger issues.
But I'm saying that with so many artists, you see things that influence their lives at very early ages, and a lot of times it dealt with things with their family. And so this is just another example, I think, of Rivers and the band taking things that they had learned from other stuff and reshaping it, making it their own.
All right, getting on to the next song is another one of my favorites, Holiday. Man, I love the drums at the end there because you can see he's doing those double hits and stuff when he was doing single hits before to simulate that heartbeat, you know, like, yeah, it's so cool. Man, I love this song so much because it's like all the harmony parts, all the weird orchestration, like the fact that there's a little keyboard solo in between the chorus and the second verse, like it just so good.
It starts off just soaring. Right away, like it. There's no wait. There's no build up to it. It's like taking off in a rocket. Some of the stuff later on in the song, I think it if I'm remembering correctly, it starts to touch a little bit on again a Beach Boys influence. I mean, and sort of
and the chord progression. You can hear the chord progression. Was a 50s rock song.
Early
60s rock song.
You hear the. Multiple singers singing different lines. Basically, you get these melodies sort of once over the top of each other, and it happens several times in the whole album. We just haven't been listening to the songs long enough to hear it. So, highly recommend that. And it is another thing that started to show up in other bands' music. Once again. Referencing the Impossibles, that it's something that they used, I think, to great effect. You know, having singer A sing a series of lines over, and then having singer B either start that same line, but having them start like a bar later, so that you get you get all these things going together. It's a favorite of mine in terms of expanding the sonic landscape that you have to toy with.
Absolutely. Totally agree. But let's move on to the final song on the album, which is called Only in Dreams.
Thank you.
I gotta say, like, it's been forever since I've actually listened to that song.
Oh, yeah, it only gets better too as that song goes along, because it's one that sort of slowly builds and gets up to the just an overwhelming crescendo as you get near the end. It opens up there with just Matt Sharp's bass playing, and it focuses on another component that Sharp, I think, really brought to the band. He actually learned falsetto just for this album. You know, like he had never sung falsetto before, but he learned that, and it's featured on several of the backing vocals of him sort of singing these high parts over
the other part that he was singing. Yeah.
Yeah. Over Rivers, like normal, like it's already sort of high voice. Yeah, this one can go on. I want to say it's like a 6-minute track or something.
Yeah, it seemed to be one of the longer ones on the list.
Yeah,
so.
They kind of let themselves get a little indulgent. It's 8 minutes, so I was even wrong there. And I will listen to all 8, you know, it doesn't feel like 8 minutes. Because I enjoy that song so much that it doesn't feel like it just lasts and lasts and lasts. You kind of get to lazily lay in it like it's being in a very nice pool at a very pleasant temperature, but there's a certain melancholy element for me in this, because Weezer goes on to do the Pinkerton album, mm-hmm. Which at the time is not a huge success, but it was one that I always loved, and part of it was because Rivers is just really open and honest, and maybe lays a little too much of his soul out in that one.
Yeah.
Makes people uncomfortable. And then it's after that time, that's when Michael and Carly pass away, and it's just another blow to the band. And then at that point, Matt Sharp steps away. He forms the Rentals and just, you know, basically never comes back.
Yeah.
And so... For Weezer fans, and you know, I definitely count myself among those, there's an element of, it's like Rivers and Matt are our parents and they got divorced and now we have to split time between them on weekends. As much as I've loved later Weezer albums, and these last two have just been astounding. I enjoy
that's,
these last.
That's what I've heard, that they've gotten back more to their roots.
Yeah.
And
these last two are so much closer, and part of it is, you know, Rick Ocasek did produce the most recent Weezer album, it's not as poppy, it's not as mass produced, but you know, as this song goes, in a way you're starting, it finishes this album, but it also starts an era where Weezer itself kind of finishes for a while.
Yeah,
because there's such a long hiatus between Pinkerton and then what you would call the Green Album, which is another Rick Ocasek produced album, but still, there was an element missing in that Green Album that, mm-hmm. when it comes back, even though there's some great songs on there, there's a sense of loss, I think, in the music itself, but then there you don't hear those same backing vocals. You don't have that same vibe, I think, that Matt Sharp brought to the band. And I don't know if that was a purposeful decision, or Rivers was sort of like, I'm going to cut that element out, or if it was just something he didn't know how to reproduce.
Yeah.
But all in all, this is from the moment I heard the first tracks of this album, as a 14-year-old, this was something that I kind of fell in love with.
Yeah.
It
took me a couple more years after that.
Well, yeah, you know, you would have been 12
at the time. I was 12 at the time, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it took me a couple more years, and like, I mean, I was a 12-year-old. I didn't know anything in particular, but it wasn't until, you know, I hit my teen years that I basically got sucked into the nerd world, and that's when Weezer really started to appeal to me, just with the way that he was and the way that it sounded. So, but this album still has a special place in my heart just for being the way that it is.
I think it's an album that stands up over time. You can listen to albums from the 90s and, mm-hmm. go, this really feels like a product of a particular era, and you had to be alive at that time to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't want to push any grunge bands under the bus, because there's still some phenomenal bands out of that era. There are bands that, that you can still listen to that are great, but there are some, you know, some of the songs from that you listen to it and you're like, oh man, we were in a weird place that we thought this was a great song.
Well, I mean, when it comes to the grunge world, like everything seemed to be pretty angry, you know, there was a lot of this like real sort of anger involved. And Weezer, while it's kind of on the fun-ish side, it's not angry. It's like you said, it's melancholy.
Yeah, there's heartfelt.
There's a level of I don't want to say depression, but there's a level of sadness that sort of is an undertone in the entire album. And it's like you said, it's Rivers Cuomo, like you know, dealing with stuff in his life, mm-hmm. and then that translating into the album.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a far stretch to say that Weezer was very influential mm-hmm. in the eventual emo scene that comes out.
Yeah.
And you don't see it like note for note necessarily when you're listening to songs by like Thursday or My Chemical Romance or anything like that. But I think you can see track some of the DNA as it goes through.
Yes.
Because it was one of the, like you said, it is one of the first albums from that era that was, it's not melancholy, but it's there's a sadness, but it's also vulnerable.
Yes,
at times, especially with In the Garage, that it's like, I don't want these other people to hate the thing that I love.
Yeah,
and so I'm hiding it here.
And I think that one of the other things too that differentiates them between, them and like other grunge acts, is that a lot of what Kurt Cobain sang about, or like Eddie Vedder,
mm-hmm.
they sang about other things outside of themselves.
Yeah.
Stories or things that they'd seen or things like that. There wasn't a lot of like self-reflection,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly what is in the Weezer album, is that it's a lot of it's him dealing with stuff. It's about him. It's not like in a narcissistic kind of way. It's more like, yep,
this is
I'm screwed up.
This is like, he's not trying to be narcissistic. It's like, just this is pouring out of myself. You know, the one exception to that on this album might be the opening track, My Name is Jonas.
Yeah.
Which Jason Cropper, the guy who's erased from history, he does have a writing credit for it. So does Patrick Wilson, the drummer. And that's a song that, like, it has some of those story components. It's, in a way, it's a lot of non sequiturs.
Yeah.
And so I to me, if you look at those lyrics versus some of the other lyrics, you're like, okay, well, this doesn't quite match up, because, like, as far as I know, no one in the band is actually named Jonas. There isn't like a story to be told. There's no like emotional truths that kind of get poured out on that. And so it's still a fun song, but it stands out from the other ones that it's maybe slightly askew.
My Name is Jonas. It also happens to be the song that I probably say that line the most, just like in everyday life, especially considering that a mutual friend of ours has a child named Jonas.
I know two people named Jonas. I see a kid every weekday named Jonas, and you're right. It takes everything in me to, you know, keep from saying, my name is Jonas.
When I first met our mutual friend, Chris, and his son, it's like, he's, oh, this is my son Jonas, and I go, his name is Jonas, and he goes, he's like, I see what you did there. So,
you know, what's fascinating though is like nobody has named their kid that, as far as the Jonases that I've met. Like,
yes.
How do you not?
Like, how did you not do that? You know. So, but either way, I mean, I've had a blast doing this album review, Jamie. Thank you for coming on and doing it with me. You were obviously far more knowledgeable about the actual band than I am, but that's because I really, really like the band, and I really love this album, but it's like I haven't really followed a lot of the other stuff that they've done, and you have. So you latched onto them really hard and just stuck with
it. Well, I was definitely delving into liner notes, and there's a weird era of where you had to like send off letters to get copies of lyrics and things like that. So you guys with... grew up with the internet, don't have to mess with that. But
I do have to ask though, if we're doing a rating, because we rate every album, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you rank this? Like on your all time list?
So on my all time list,
compared to all other albums,
yeah, I mean, I'd have to give it like a 9, because I I don't know what a perfect album would be. You know,
to me, this actually qualifies as as a near perfect album.
Yeah,
so.
there isn't. I mean, look, the second song, because of the sort of controlling elements to it, that's my least favorite. But it's not a song that I hate. I'm always hesitant to like give a perfect score to something. This would be in my top 10, probably in my top 3 of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah,
so
for me to give something a 10, it has to be like not only exceptionally awesome, but it really impacts my life and I listen to it constantly front to back like over a long period of time. And I can only name maybe like 4 or 5 albums that actually fall into that category. One of them being a group that obviously spawned after Weezer, the Stereo, with their album Rewind and Recoil, which you introduced me to in the first place.
That's a great album,
and
too.
And I honestly, whenever people ask me what's my favorite album, the Stereo, Rewind and Record. Favorite album of all time for me.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, as far as Weezer goes, this one, I'll give it a solid 8.5 just right there, because it's like I said, I love the album, but at the same time, I'm not really going to listen to it on a consistent basis.
Yeah, this is something I could probably listen to all the way through once a week, and I'd never get bored of it. I listened to it on the way over here and realized, like, I know basically every word to every song.
That's exactly the way I feel about Rewind and Record.
If you guys really love this one the way I do, check out almost any album by The Stereo. Personally, I really love 300 by The Stereo.
And we're going to try and go see them in Chicago when they play at a festival up there kind of thing.
The Rentals, which if you love Weezer, you probably already know that's a sort of spinoff of Matt Sharp's band, a lot more synthesizer driven, but great stuff. And then I'll throw one more in there. That Dog,
which I don't actually know.
That Dog is sort of a female fronted. Some of the members of That Dog joined The Rentals. Mm. They were always two bands that the Weezer and That Dog kind of ran in the same circles. They hung out a lot. I wouldn't say that like they're a female version of Weezer, but they definitely have some of the same guitar sound. There's all of that synthesizer that's in The Rentals comes from That Dog. So if you like that sound, check it out. Stunning female vocals too. So That Dog album, the name is escaping me, but you could pick up anything by them and I think it'd be great.
Yeah. Fortunately, people have access to the World Wide Web and Google.
Oh, we do too. I just don't want to take up any more time doing it.
No, this has been a fantastic episode. I love doing it with you. I definitely want to get you back on for some other of like our mutual influential albums, you know, that really got in with us. But if you like the show, and hopefully you did, you can support us by going to followthesoundpodcast.com. And on the right-hand side, you'll see an Amazon banner. Click on the banner. It takes you to Amazon. Do all your normal shopping. And we get a little bit of money back. And it just helps us out just a little bit. Or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. And it does the exact same thing. But it doesn't cost you anything extra. It's super easy. And it helps us out. So please go and do that. But once again, Jamie, it was a blast having you on.
Well, thanks for having me on. Happy to come back some other time. We've already discussed some albums that I wouldn't mind digging into either.
We honestly need to like get together on one night and you and I just like knock out like 3 of them in a row.
Oh yeah.
You know, and then I've got them, you know, set to go for the future. So let's make a plan for that one. Hopefully it'll be after I'm actually done moving and stuff and I don't have to deal with all that crap. But remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.